welcome back to the Retail Wrap-Up for 2024, retail's favourite podcast. Retail Oasis is extremely proud to bring you our fourth season, and we can't wait to introduce you to more inspiring, innovative, and fascinating guests from a plethora of retail brands. You're joined, as always, by retail strategist and enthusiast, Maddie Colmar, that's me, as well as my colleague and strategist here at Retail Oasis, Emma Easton. Retail Oasis would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognising the continued connection to lands, waters and communities. We pay our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders past, present and emerging. As self-proclaimed snackaholics, we're thrilled to have Daniel Kitte, the founder of Funday Sweets, joining us today. Daniel's journey in the retail and confectionery industry is nothing short of inspiring. From his humble beginnings, he carved a path into the world of sweets, driven by a passion for innovation and a keen eye for spotting market gaps. In the midst of the pandemic, Daniel founded Funday, a natural lolly brand offering a sugar-free alternative to consumers, despite the challenging times. Fast forward to 2024, and Funday's exponential growth has landed them in 5,000 stores, a true testament to Daniel's entrepreneurial acumen and the brand's undeniable appeal. During our conversation with Daniel, we discuss his background and how he ended up in the confectionery industry and what drew him in, his motivation for creating Funday Sweets and how he got his foot in the door, the challenges of starting a business during the pandemic and how informative customer feedback is to the Funday business, finding the silver lining in a mistake and turning it into a tasty win, and lastly, we take a look at what's next for Funday in 2024 and beyond. We hope you enjoy this conversation.
A very big welcome to Daniel Kitte. Welcome to season four of the Retail Wrap-Up podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Maddie and Em.
Of course. It's always great if we start at the beginning and understand you and your story and a bit about your background. So tell us about you.
Sure. Broad question. I'm a Perth boy, but living in Melbourne. I've got a wife and a 2.5-year-old girl called Willow. And I am a lawyer by background, by sort of what I did at uni, law and commerce, and started working for a company in Melbourne, which is now Luxury Escapes, or Lux Group, for a number of years before sort of going into, call it the health and wellness industry, be it vitamins and supplements, and was there for a number of years before starting Funday. I've always been a entrepreneurial sort of person, always like throughout school and university, and even starting Funday and going through all the rigor of starting a business, always starting businesses and trying to make something of my own, and fundamentally wanted to work for myself. So I'm a real passionate, healthy living, balanced person. I believe in a health work-life balance. I really enjoy producing like healthy products that people genuinely get to have, enjoy, embrace, feel good about. The products that I've now created are, you know, designed so that I would feel comfortable and genuinely great giving it to my family and friends. And it just so happens that other people also love it as well. But for me, you can do it sort of two ways. You can create something purely for commercial value. And that wasn't what I wanted to pursue. I wanted to try do well commercially, but I also wanted to do good at the same time. And so that's what sort of drives me. And I guess that's a little bit about me in a nutshell.
Brilliant. I mean, I can't help but wonder how you go from law and commerce to Luxury Escapes to confectionery.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that journey. Like, why confectionery and what drew you in?
Yeah. I think one of the benefits now that I'm running a business is that I've been across a number of different industries and a number of different roles. And I think that's a really interesting thing because, you know, a lot of people have different experiences running a business, but I think running a business is so multifactorial that you need to sort of be across operations, supply chain, finance, product development, people management, finance. There's just so many things that occur in a business. And at any time, really for any business, there is a stage where you're doing everything, like regardless. I mean, if you're lucky enough to get capital, outside capital, that might be different. But for the vast majority of people, that doesn't actually happen. For me, like the confectionery category made a lot of sense. So I was a pretty big kid growing up, was always like fairly overweight, like a happy sort of kid and like loved playing sport and stuff, but it was always like weight was sort of, I wouldn't say the defining feature, but it was very prominent in my life. Like it was always a diet or going to a dietitian and like, you know, don't eat this. So that was sort of how I grew up. And that was like very acceptable to like as well in like I was born in late 80s. Like that was like a normal thing. Like it was a dieting culture. Like that's what was relevant. And that's fine for that day. It's changed now, thankfully. But I guess when I finished school, I started going out with friends and, you know, going out and decided that I needed to try find like a girlfriend or needed to do other things like that. And I really thought weight was limiting me in being more confident and getting out there. And so I started exercising, started running and doing all that really good stuff too. But I actually then cut out pretty much all sugar in my diet. And that meant like losing lollies and chocolates and all that sort of like really fun stuff that I really enjoyed growing up. And so it always been like that guilty pleasure. And now it was just like not even there at all. So I dabbled in like sugar-free options in both of those. The problem that I later found out many years later is that they've got a high concentration of sugar alcohols as a replacer of what's typically just glucose and sugar. And because they're in such high concentration, they make you feel really sick. Just the way that they operate, like people don't necessarily know sugar alcohol, but they know the warning statement on a packet that says like excess consumption may cause or may have a laxative effect. It's sort of like it's on chewing gums and things like that. I think throughout the professional life and moving between the tech sort of businesses and the vitamin and supplement businesses, on that journey of wanting to create my own business and having those real practical professional experiences, I realized you could do confectionery without those nasty sugar substitutes and also reduce the sugar to an excessive amount, but also create a really good tasting product. And so that was just a combination of like a journey and going on different sort of experiences to find that that was possible. So for me, it was like a professional, project, creating my first ever like genuine business, but be like a real personal passion project as well, because it sort of meant that if I could create something that I could enjoy again but not feel guilty about, then I was like serving me really well, and I knew there were heaps of other people that had that same problem.
Yeah, for sure. And it is a generational thing though, right? Like I know that type of dieting culture or that relationship with food definitely comes from our parents. I'm similar to you, also born late 80s. And I can say 100% that like that culture was definitely ingrained within my own household. And the idea of a small bag where one whole bag is one serve is incredibly smart. And it kind of means that you can still have that treat, but it's actually delicious and you don't feel guilty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And correct. It's also educating consumers, because think back 10 years ago, all of this like low sugar, low fat, just different kind of ways to make something sound super healthy. And like the consumers, people like us fell for it. Whereas now it's good to have like options like this that are actually really good for you.
Absolutely.
I've got to ask, so you've obviously come from a super different background. How did you get your foot into the door business-wise into confectionery?
I guess just being on the ground and learning for the first time. Like I clearly hadn't started a confectionery business before. I'd not even really started any decent sized business in my life historically. So, you know, it was really the story of like starting out from what is the concept to what's the size of the prize? How am I actually going to do this? Who's going to sell it? How am I going to sell it? Who's going to fund it? What are we going to do for marketing to promote it? Like all of those things I didn't really have really great experience in. I knew the questions I needed to ask. I think the benefit was that at the time that I was creating it, there was a brand in the US, which is now like a multi-hundred million dollar US business, and they were doing incredibly well and started by like a young entrepreneur out of Canada. And it just seemed to me possible that you didn't need to have a huge amount of like relevant experience within the industry to be successful. And so it's sort of inspiring to see other people doing it and sort of call it winging it or one foot in front of the other, same sort of thing. And so it was very much just that, like one foot, you know, okay, I needed a product. How am I going to do that? What are the ingredients we need? Okay, then we'll reach out to the ingredient supplier. Oh, well, I need to get some molds because I need to test them at home. So it's just literally a logical process that is hard to really like explain in a really clear process, but it just sort of happens naturally as you sort of go through the evolution of creating a brand and creating a business. So a bit of totally baptism by fire, a few good mentors and people around me to guide, but ultimately it was just like driven by passion just to get into it. And I had sort of blind faith that everything would sort of work out, which I think you need a little bit of that like ignorance is bliss sort of thing clouding you, because if you know everything, it's also not always a good thing.
And were you, obviously you were motivated for personal reasons, when it came to marketing and consumer facing things, were you thinking of yourself as the consumer and what would you want?
Yeah, definitely. Like 100%. Like I feel like I'm the ultimate consumer. Like, you know, naturally in this business, particularly when you're in retail, like you're often talking to a female customer, and often it's a mum who's the main grocery buyer. So yeah, like marketing has changed in the way that we actually speak and how we speak to people. But in essence, it's the same. It's everyone's driven by the same purpose, which is like, I love confectionery. I don't feel great eating it. How good would it be if I could like enjoy the essence of the sweet yum treat that makes me feel like I'm back at an 8-year-old birthday party enjoying it, not even having a care in the world, but I'm now older and I can actually enjoy it and not have that sense of like guilt clouding. So I think different customers, but ultimately what I was thinking was so many other people were thinking. And so sort of it was a bit like talking to yourself, but we had to sort of angle it because we knew we weren't talking to like, you know, 35-year-old men all the time. So we do it in a different way, but it's the same thing.
I've got to ask, right? So they're called Fun Day Natural Sweets.
Yeah.
Why sweets and not lollies? Because I'm a Brit and we do call lollies sweets at home. So I'm like, why call them sweets?
It's a great question. It was like a conversation we would have had probably 4 years ago. And to be honest, I can't remember the exact defining reason. That went one way or the other. I think it might have sounded better. But I think definitely the core reason was that lollies is it's sort of refining you just to a lolly brand, whereas sweets enabled us to go outside if we ever wanted to and sort of carried the same purpose and the same meaning. But if we wanted to go into like any other sweet product, well, then we had the ability to. So I think, and that's the reason Fun Day as well, it's not just like the lolly company or something really descriptive. It's like if we decide at some point in the future of the business that we want to go and create, I don't know, like anything, is there a name that can carry on across so many different categories? So Fun Day is the trademark name. Natural Sweets is like the descriptive name. So Fun Day we can carry across really anywhere. So if we go and do, I don't know, automotive parts, it could be Fun Day Automotive Parts. And so it really just, who knows what happens in the future of business.
It's the space.
Yeah, watch this space, yeah. Exhaust pipes or something, I don't know.
So Fun Day was started in 2021, aka mid-pandemic. Yeah. How did this play out for you? I would imagine this would have been a really tumultuous time to have started a business, although I will say I ate my fair share of sweets during this pandemic, so I feel like it was the right time.
Yes. Oh, like absolute shocker time. I said, like, it was... It's so conflicting, like shocking time in terms of like, you know, people are at home, they weren't really going to retail, and that's really bad because our product does really well on a shelf retail. So you've got like a huge problem to start with. We're very fortunate that our first customer was Chemist Warehouse, and one of the only places people were going was the pharmacy. And there's sort of a bit of luck, a little bit of strategy, but a lot of luck in the way that sort of panned out. Similarly, 6 months later, we went into Woolies at the end of 21. And that's when people really started going out of their homes and going back into retail. And then 6 months after that, we went into Ampol. And that's when people had started driving again because like COVID was sort of like nearing the end. So we're sort of very lucky in the way that the channel management worked itself out. Like I said, a little bit of strategy, a lot of luck in that. But it was a very tough time to start a business. like we manufacture in Switzerland, so we're importing product. We're spending money in Swiss franc, US dollars. It was the worst sort of conversion rate in the last like 10 years. Freight went from roughly about $10,000 a container because it's coming from Europe and it's refrigerated to somewhere under about $35,000 a container. So, you know, financially it was very tough, and there were, and you know, at the beginning of the business, you're not optimized. You are the least optimized you'll ever be. So you're spending way too much on a product. And I think if someone would have come into the business and just objectively assessed what was going on in the first 6 months, it would have been like, great, you've got a couple of good contracts, but like this is going to be a tough slog. The benefit though was that because it was so shit, not many other businesses were trying to do this sort of stuff because it was really hard, and everyone was focusing on their own thing, and you know, going out to manufacturers wasn't a thing, like developing at the food lab wasn't a thing. So there's a lot of advantage we had in just getting it done before COVID. And then we sort of had a really long lead of potential incumbents that came into the market. So I say it was, and I guess at the same time, like I was home a lot. I wasn't socializing as much as I normally do. I was saving money, which I needed to put money into Fund A. There was a lot of sort of environmental factors that were happening at the same time that enabled the focus to be on Fund A 110% and not on going out on a Saturday night and drinking and then being hungover on Sunday and not working. It was like full on just Fund A for that period of time. So in essence, really focused, really difficult. And I think for me, I knew what could be built. So it was all about seeing through the tough time. And sometimes, and I was talking to someone about it yesterday who was speaking to another supplier, like the pricing of one of the raw materials has gone through the roof. And he said, essentially, while it's really bad, it's actually in your future-proof yourself, because if you price your products at the worst possible time, it will get better. But then if it goes bad again, then you actually are in a reasonable commercial position because you've done it at the right time. So a lot of people are very aggressive and they get it at the best possible time. They reduce the cost, and then when they get a price increase, it's all over. So there's sort of blessings like within all of this stuff as well. You sort of just got to see the upside and sort of see the sort of things that are popping through that, you know, while it's cloudy and pretty average, there are a few like little stars there. So, yeah.
Wow. I would definitely say that you have had luck on your side from the beginning. And it definitely sounds like the pandemic was more of a help than a hindrance to really, you know, narrow your view on just Fund Day, getting things going. And like you said, that's really an important thing to think about, right? That whole pricing strategy. Yeah. It's really interesting. Like so many outcomes from something that was, you know, a really crappy time actually turned out to be really wonderful for you.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Which takes me nicely into what I wanted to bring up next, which is that I read a recent article on Smart Company that was titled Natural Leaf Company Fund Day in 5,000 stores after 250% year-on-year growth. Yeah. That's insane. Tell us more.
It's quite funny because for me it's not that crazy of a headline because I've sort of been in the weeds sort of slogging at all the accounts of the last 3 years. But I know when I speak to people, they sort of have the same reaction. I think getting to 5,000 stores in 2.5 years is fantastic. And objectively, if I take myself back 3 years ago, I think that would have been a crazy concept and a crazy thought. I think for me, it's not. I think, you know, founders can be like quite blind to it as well. But I fully believed it should be in probably more than it is. Because, you know, I'm probably more like, why is it not in 7,000? why is it only in 5,000? Because the goalposts always change. You win an account, you're like, great, we've done that, worked on that for a year, like, who's next? So, yes, it's incredible. It's shown that the market has really accepted the brand and the product incredibly well. More so, moving into more stores has not cannibalized sales in the other stores, which is probably like the major consideration that a lot of brands would have with their products going into like such wide distribution. I think, again, lucky in terms of timing and the way that things really worked out, being first to market, having a really long lead of just us in the market and creating and educating and being sort of the prominent better for you confectionery player has worked wonders. And the success of one in the early days is just been like a stepping stone for securing other accounts. And that's sort of, it's never been 5,000 all in one. It's a slog in one for 3 months, 6 months, get really good sales traction, good data, good information, take it onto the next one and say, look, this is what we did here. We really think it could drive incrementality. You know, the confectionery industry, it's, if you put out another brand, you're very unlikely going to be bringing in a new customer into that category. A healthy customer's, 30% of customers avoid confectionery aisle. So the question is, well, like, how do you create something better in that same aisle? A lot of brands try it and then they just switch from one brand to the other. So you call it cannibalizing one for the other one. It doesn't really make sense. So why Fundo's been really good and the retailers have liked it, which has enabled us to grow, is that we're actually bringing new people into the category, because we're now saying to people, well, like, a third of our people were never eating confectionery before. Like, that's a really huge thing for your category. You're getting more people walk through, more people buying, which means it's growing. And I think they really like that. And so the product, it, I guess, speaks for itself in that regard and sort of enabled with a lot of hard work to get into those amounts of stores.
And it's interesting on the point of the customer. Do you typically get a lot of feedback from customers, and does that, is that kind of embedded into your strategy?
Yeah, definitely. We, I mean, just like anecdotally as well, like, we get emails every day. I hear from people all the time with things that we should be doing or things that we're not, or have you considered this type of packaging, or what about this shape or this flavour? So we get that just anecdotally, which we take on board. And then our database is now pushing about 100,000, and we, and a lot of those are very loyal people. So we'll go out and speak to people and survey them and ask them questions. You know, we really want to know, like, why are you buying it, and like, who's it for, and what purpose is it serving? So, like, emotional questions, not just like, hey, what flavor would you like? So we really want to see why and who and how, like, all those questions. Where are they actually consuming the product? Is it in the car? Is it at the gym? Is it on, are they giving it to their kids? You know, we saw a lot of elderly people, like, by Fundo, and my first reaction was like, oh, like, I didn't expect, you know, 70 plus probably to get into Fundo. But then we called them and then they're actually buying for their grandkids that come over after school on the weekend. So it's like, you think you've got data, but you really need to interact with people to really understand the habits and purchasing sort of like habits of what they're going through. And that then encourages you to come up with new products and development around what people are actually searching for and claims that are relevant for the packet and all that sort of marketing too.
Have you got any products that have solely been kind of created because of feedback from customers?
Definitely. Like, I would say outside of our four that we launched with, which were very much, like, call it product-led, everything else has been market-led. So we see data. We know what's happening in confectionery and health food aisles across Australia. We got a really good gut feel that those will do really well, but really we validate, and we have spreadsheets with, you know, this many people have requested a strawberries and cream product and whatever, and then that then becomes like, well, why would we launch anything else if that's what the people want? Like, it's not, doesn't actually make any logical sense. And those decisions have led us to, like, our strawberries and cream was our last product we launched, is now the number one seller within the range, because it's what people are after and what people are asking for. I think I had about five other products that I think I wanted to launch, but then, you know, you just got to listen to the people.
Yeah, and my own introduction to Fundo was actually kind of, I was not purchasing for myself. It was actually for my son. Lucky little guy, got my genetics and we're both gluten intolerant. And finding candy or a chewy lolly that is gluten-free is actually impossible, particularly when you start looking into the ingredients. And it's actually scary what we will happily eat because we don't understand the ingredients.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was what he wanted. He'd never tried red frogs in his life. And so that was the angle that we took. And how
hopefully he was happy.
Extremely. In fact, like, he recognizes that packet so well now at the, when you're at the checkout, it's scary. Yeah. And I've got the opposite story where I live with two girls, so it's a house of three, and we're all quite gym focused. And I always get a message on a Friday, even on the way home from work, please pick up some fun days. We really need a sweet treat. But
I think that's the appeal of fun day. Like, it really crosses boundaries, whether it's like different age groups, people after different things, different interest groups. And I think that's why people like confectionery is so well loved, like, as a category, because, like, it's sweet, it's yum, it makes you feel good. The problem is if it's full of sugar, you end up not feeling good. And that's like that 2 seconds of joy for like hours of like shame after. It's like not what people want. Yeah. So I think that's sort of like the real easy selling point of Funday. It's just like, it's a better for you lolly and it tastes great. It's not that complicated.
And then we have to ask, obviously it sounds like your journey over the past few years has been pretty turbulent. But of course you've had a lot of successes, but that doesn't come without the failures.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know anyone that started a business that hasn't failed at a number of things. And I think the trick is to figure out why that happened and rectify. You know, we were dealing with a huge amount of like different stakeholders, whether it be like freight companies, packaging companies. And I've made multiple mistakes, like working with the wrong people, sort of backing businesses and people that I thought had really like great intentions to sort of like, you know, really be running with Funday and giving all the attention. And we've had issues where, you know, packets have been broken. We've had to dump $50,000 worth of stock. I think like a really interesting one, and I don't know how many, or whether both of you or some of the listeners would have seen our freeze-dried gummy bears that we've got on our website. You know, it's a sort of, it was our first to market freeze-dried healthy product, because they're all typically just freeze-drying on a full sugar confectionery. But that was actually a mistake. Like that was a fail initially, because I had got the demand planning wrong and we ordered too many gummy bears and they were going to expire at some point. So I happened to be on TikTok, even though I'm mid-30s, I feel like I'm progressive like that. And I realized that like freeze-drying candy was like a really big trend. So I was like, well, I couldn't sleep. It was like midnight, 1 a.m. or whatever. And I was on LinkedIn messaging a freeze-drying company founder like, hey, is this possible? Like if we send you bulk gummy bears, could you do this? And he called me in the morning. It was really nice, like super great guy actually. And we ended up freeze-drying, I think like 1,000 or 2,000 kilos of gummy bears, which meant that the entire team had to go into the factory and open up 20 pallets of stock and send them to them. So it was like 2-day event of like everyone there. It's a great team building exercise, but completely as a fail, I completely stuffed up, got the products freeze dried and then got the packaging made, which is great. And we just called it a limited edition because it was limited. Hopefully we don't have the same problem ever again. And it enabled us to create a new product completely first in the world, like so innovative. And so it's sort of just like an example of you can stuff up and there may be a way to learn from it and rectify and even do well out of it. And we had a very, very similar thing with our frogs. We made too many frogs. This was like the first year of business. And I was like, what are we going to do? So we sour coated them. We did a limited edition sour frog. And like, interestingly, so many people want that product back. It may well come back as a permanent line. Sometimes like these mistakes and these challenges actually create significant opportunity. You don't know until you get into it. You try to reduce the amount of mistakes and failures and challenges, you know, all this sort of stuff. But eventually no one's perfect. So shit happens. It's just how you deal with it is really what defines the business and the people.
I love that. What a delicious mistake. I'm literally like salivating about those frogs. I'd love to know, what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, there's two. I met someone yesterday who's super smart and done really well. And it's really around people management. So it's about hiring people. And he's got like the two, I think it's the 2S rule, something like that. I think it's the 2S rule. It's you really want to hire someone that gives a shit. And the other one is you want to hire someone that gets shit done. And if you only have one, that's not good enough. You need both of those things to have like a really cracker person. And so when I look for people now, it's like, do they fulfill the 2S test or whatever the title of the test is called? I really like that. For me, if I think about the people that do the best in our business, they fulfill both those boxes. They tick both those boxes. Otherwise, I sort of always work with the mantra of there is no such thing as luck. It's when preparation meets opportunity. And for me, that is really important because, like, while I said, yes, it was lucky in those times with the way that the channels worked out. Well, that was like 2 years of bloody hard work trying to get to the point that we had a product and a million things that could have stopped me. And so you're still pushing through. And while you may be preparing, getting the product, really are waiting for that opportunity of the retailer to reach out, or you to reach out to the retailer. But you can, if you go and reach out to them, you don't have anything prepared, or you don't know the product, it doesn't work. Like, you need two things to tango. So I really go by both those things. One, from like a put your head down, work really hard. If you don't see the reward now, it will likely come at some point. You're just not sure when. And then from a people management perspective, I think they've got to tick the two boxes.
I think it's true what you say about the luck, because if you put everything down to luck, then you're disregarding all the hard work you put into it. And you need to obviously put a lot of hard work into it, so you need to recognise that.
Correct.
Bit of a different question, but kind of outside of the fun day round, what's your retail brand? And that could be domestic, that could be international, just who is your top favourite?
Fun Day was very inspired by Remedy Kombucha. In the way that they, you know, they had a tougher job in sort of educating the market about what their product was and what kombucha is and SCOBY and why it tasted not like a soft drink. And they had like big challenges and have done incredibly well to be sort of market leader in Australia and overseas do incredibly well. But what I really liked about that was just the focus on brand and like the emotional strings that that brand would pull that you didn't see, but you could feel it. So you could visibly, like I live in Paran and you'd go for a picnic down the road and sort of like a young sort of demo. There'd be people like having a picnic with like Remedy Kombucha. And it was like, it was a thing to like be seen having a Remedy Kombucha. For confectionery, no one, I don't think it ever felt proud walking down the street eating a bag of Red Frogs or a snake. And part of like the vision and sort of inspired by Remedy was like, how do we get people to feel confident and feel great walking down the street, walking, eating a bag of Red Frogs or snakes? And I think that there's been a huge focus on that. It's the way that the packaging reflects that very much. So sort of the minimalist but sufficient information on it gives it that. Like the fact that we don't focus on calories because it's not a diet-focused product. The fact that we work with certain partners and certain brands, like everything that goes into brand sort of ladders up to how we want people to feel when they see and eat Fun Day. And I think they were a very similar case study in beverage that we took a lot of inspo from. We obviously don't know how they did it, but we could see what we wanted to be in terms of like when a consumer had a Fun Day, what we wanted them to feel. So it was really important. I know it's not a retail, it sort of is a retail brand. Like I just love Mecca. Like even as a guy, I think it's 5% male stuff in there. But I just think like flawless execution in terms of A, like the in-store experience with the amount of staff, knowledgeable staff, like always have stock. The omni-channel ability of that retailer is the best I've ever seen. You can go in there and it's just not an issue if they don't have that size or this specific SKU, because if you put it in store, you'll get it tomorrow or the next day, because they prioritize people that go and buy in store to get it first. Like they just get it. And then they run probably Australia's best loyalty program, where like every female that I've ever hired is like, you walk in, it's like, I've got like, this is the loyalty status that I am at Mecca. Like it's a thing. And for me, I didn't know that before sort of getting into the business, but I've seen how proud people are and what people do to aspire to be higher and higher. And that takes like a lot of effort for a business to get to that point. So much thought and refinement and investment. Like I don't think we are like the Mecca brand in a lot of ways. We're very distinct and different, but like there are elements within that business that are just like flawless, and that's why they do so well and have done so well for so long.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with both of those brands. The emotive connection that you feel to both is like, it's not tangible, but you know it's there. Yeah. And it is definitely something that I would think any brand would want to kind of accomplish those similar feelings. So, yeah, definitely agree with your response there.
So, Daniel, what is next for Fun Day? Can you share, have you got any big plans for 2024, new products, any partnerships?
We've got a new product coming out in April. I can't say what it is yet, but it's very delicious. It is a
market-led product that we've been told to produce over thousands and thousands of times. So the innovation of that one is really complicated. It took a long time, but it tastes awesome, and I think it's going to do incredibly well. So outside of sort of like, you know, developing new products and new lines within the confectionery space, which is clearly what we're doing, moving a bit more broader globally is sort of on the agenda for this year. So we do already play in some markets, particularly Middle East, in some of the retailers there, but also in Singapore, at Cold Storage, which is their like sort of main grocery there, and New Zealand, we're at Chemist Warehouse. But the aim is to really get into more mature markets for that understand better for you. So think like UK, USA, other bigger markets where the size of the prize is like significant. In saying that, it's not a sure thing. Like, while there's obviously a huge customer base, there's a huge amount of risk involved in it. We've seen really great Aussie businesses moving like overseas, overly investing in their launch in overseas markets, and sort of takes down the entire business, including what they built in Australia. So, you know, we have very big aspirations for becoming a global leader in better for you confectionery. However, it just needs to be done quite smart, on a sort of on a step change process. So like everything, we try our best, we dig as much into the information in the markets as possible, but you know, there's certainly no guarantee that that will happen. But I think there are ways this year that we will test those markets to see whether we can do well there or not without over investing in it.
I think that's really smart to be sustainable about a launch, because like you said, so often there are brands that kill themselves because they overinvest in that launch, banking, you know, putting all their eggs into one basket, and then it doesn't go off as planned. So I think that's very smart.
Yeah.
So our last question is one that we've been asking all of our guests this season, and I'd love to know, in a sentence, how would you describe the past 12 months? And on the back of that, what are you manifesting for the next 12 months?
I would say the last 12 months has been like a visit to a theme park with a number of rides, including roller coasters. But at the end, we've always ended up at the cafe having a coffee and having a good time. And, you know, I'd say you sort of get the thrill, the downs, but you sort of always, it's always ended in a really great way.
I love that.
That has got to be the best description yet.
What are you hoping for in the next 12 months? What are you manifesting?
I'm manifesting that we sort of grow up to become more of a sort of mature business and behave in a more mature business way. I mean, we are professional, but we've always wanted to be seen as a big business that has really great processes and infrastructure, like some of the big guys. In saying that, we still want to maintain the agility and adaptability of startup business mentality, which has made us successful. So we're sort of, I guess, we're manifesting growing, becoming bigger, but retaining the same mindset as a startup over the next 12 months.
Keeping it fun.
Keeping it fun.
That's all we've got time for today. Thank you for sticking around for this episode of the Retail Wrap-Up podcast. If you'd like to support our podcast, you know where to find us, on Instagram at Retail Oasis or on LinkedIn. Plus, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to receive notification when we drop a new episode. We'd love to hear from you, our loyal listeners, by way of a review, or you can drop us a guest suggestion via one of our social media channels. Once again, we appreciate your company and we're excited to delve into more insights on retail in our next episode. Bye for now.